Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. Okay, welcome to Throttle Up. For this week also, this is a special edition, a continuation of a series that we're doing, special edition series. And the title of the series is Critical Thinking in Business Operations. And this happens to be part four of that series. I kind of think that this is probably going to be the end of this special series, but you know, you never, I guess I never quite know how long it's going to take and how much information we need to discuss and put out there. So let me just say that tentatively, we think that this is going to be part four of a part four series. And again, the title of it is Critical Thinking in Business Operations. Now, you know, I was thinking about this for some time, doing this some time ago, but the idea for it has been recently reinforced. And what happened was that I was, I went to, this is last week, I went to Nashville, Tennessee for a speaking engagement. And I talked in front of a bunch of business people, and the takeaway or my impression was that these people are all trying to make their organizations function well, and they deserve a lot of credit for what they're doing, and it was really kind of an honor for me to talk to this group. It's actually a fairly large group of folks that all came together in Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville, Tennessee, by the way, is a fascinating city. If you haven't been there, I would recommend it. It's tourist friendly for sure. Lots and lots of visitors come there. Center of country Western music, lots of musicians earn their livelihood there. And I even went to the Grand Ole Opry one night and saw their show. Pretty fantastic to see it, see a live performance. So I would definitely put Nashville, Tennessee high on your list. Or if you're like me, somewhat of an older gentleman, older person, definitely put that on your bucket list. It is a rather delightful, it was for me, quite a delightful experience. So what did I think about my speaking engagement? What I thought was that business is moving very, very quickly. The business environment is moving at a very high speed. Lots and lots of things are happening. New business ventures are being proposed or executed. Also, new business models are being considered. Lots and lots of projects are being initiated across the board. And what is the reason for the projects? You know, that's a very good question. My thoughts on that is that businesses are preoccupied with project management. And, okay, so that's good, but it is also, you know, somewhat disconcerting, a little bit troubling. And my discussions here kind of, you know, kind of a takeoff from the previous shows that we did and the previous thoughts that I express, which is, you know, succeeding in Trump's America. How do we succeed? This the opportunities out there in, you know, all kinds of business or let's say engagements. We don't even have to think of it as necessarily as businesses, but engagements or gigs or what have you. There's tremendous opportunities there. And that's one of the positive things. You know, a lot of shows talk about the negative aspects the socioeconomic and political conditions of the country and the world. And that's okay. And we certainly need to be aware of that. But also, I like to look at things on the bright side and consider the fact that, okay, these are dire circumstances perhaps, but maybe not quite as dire as in previous generations or previous eras. And so how can we look at this from a positive perspective, or look at our current situation or what we expect to happen in the near term from a positive lens or positive viewpoint? How are we going to frame our situation? Mental framing is, of course, extremely important today. It has a lot to do with this new thing, which is in the area of psychology, which is called mindfulness. And I've actually had some discussions of folks that deal in this area, psychologists that deal in this area of mindfulness. And that has a lot to do with framing, how we frame our situation, how we frame an argument, how we frame a proposition, how is it framed, and stuff like that. So framing is important. My idea here is let's frame our situation that we find ourselves in as both positive, negative, and looking at it from a positive standpoint is okay to do so. And that's kind of like the whole point of this radio show, Throttle Up, as well as this special edition series that we are engaged in right now. Okay, so what is happening in business? What's happening in business today is there are lots of things going on. There's lots of projects. A bit chaotic, of course. That's not necessarily bad if we can deal with that, if we can harness that chaotic energy into something that's productive. Let's do so. And I look at it as these are great opportunities to bring in new ideas to the marketplace of ideas. New ideas to the workplace, new ideas to a particular industry, or really even across industries. What are the new ideas out there? And how should we, prepare ourselves? How should we think about what is going on? Not what is going on, but how should we think about what is going on? So how is extremely important here, much more important than the what or the here and now, but how should we go about thinking about this? Okay, so in this special edition, I want to do a few things here. The first order of business is to discuss a little bit more on critical thinking essentials, and we'll do that. So that's top on the list here as I record this show. The second one is I'm going to continue our discussions, continue our discussions and discuss in some measure of detail the Columbia Space Shuttle catastrophic accident. The reason why I'm doing that, and I've said this before, the reason why I'm doing that is not because I think I could have done a better job, but in aviation and also in space is that We try to learn from some of the situations that were that did not have a positive outcome. We try to learn from that so that we can fix or make corrections or make adjustments such that it doesn't happen again, or if the event did happen again, we are better prepared for it. So preparation is key. And so that's the reason why we're talking about that. Also, there is a item number three on my list here is there was a near miss or a near disaster in San Francisco. We will discuss that. And then finally, the Fukushima nuclear disaster. We'll discuss that too. And all of these have a common thread that runs through there. I know that sounds preposterous, perhaps, but it's not. All of these catastrophes or disasters or near disasters, they all have common underpinnings. And that is the whole point of what I would call this body of knowledge that that I work in is critical decision making. And that body of knowledge comes out of the arena that we call operational decision theory. So there's a theoretical construct to critical decision making, and that theory, operational decision theories, I am one of the authors of that theory, if not the prime mover behind it. And there's you know, there's a number of books I have written on this subject, which actually you can find them, I think, pretty much all of them on Amazon. So just type in my name, Kevin M. Smith, on Amazon, and I think you can find all of the books I've written on this subject, a number of them. Some of them are kind of, there's one that's kind of technical in nature, and it would be useful for those folks that are engaged in a formal course of instruction. I would, you know, highly recommend my book. It doesn't matter what your course of instruction is, all right? It's useful across all dimensions in all disciplines. But if you are engaged in a formal course of instruction, you might want to take a look at my book, Mission Adaptive Display Technologies. And that applies to any man-machine system, including your cell phone, by the way, you know, or including any kind of mobile device, anything, all right, your GPS device in your car, Mission Adaptive Display Technologies. And so the system produces displays for the human to interpret. And how do you do that? Is that done in an ad hoc way, or is that done in some kind of a systematic, analytic way? And that's the key to success, is looking at this as a systematic, analytic problem to deal with. Okay, so that completes the introduction. And now we're going to move on to part or session number one of this, which we think is the concluding series of this four-part series of this special edition. So let me take a quick break and we'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. So we'll talk a little bit about critical thinking essentials. And the reason why we're doing this is because we are talking about critical thinking and business operations. And so what exactly are we going to discuss? I guess the best way to say that is what exactly are we going to consider? All right, in business operations. All right, so we know the business landscape is changing dramatically, very, very quickly. We know the companies are adopting or wish to adopt or in the process of adopting new business models. We know that the customer is now front and center. The customer and the total customer satisfaction is front and center. Technology now has been removed by and large. Technology has been removed from the spotlight, and technology is a very important player in the scheme of things. Extremely important, but it is not the central player. It is not the star of the show. The star of the show is the human. The star of the show is the human operator. The star of the show is the human participating in some purposeful activity. So the star of the show is the central player. It is the key player in this drama, and we need to consider that that key player or that aspect of reality, we need to consider it more analytically. And so the star of the show, we want to ensure that we provide this player with total customer satisfaction. And how do we do that? Okay, well, my take on this whole thing and my proposition is that we first and foremost embrace critical thinking essentials. And here we go. So we're going to dive right into this thing. What are critical thinking essentials? The first order of business is how let us prepare ourselves first to be able to build a critical thinking model. So how would you, I'm not going to go immediately to the model, right? I'm going to go to the preparing ourselves for the critical thinking model. How do we do that? The first order of business is to consider how information processing occurs in what I would call a critical thinking construct. So how is information acquired and processed such that we can achieve some meaningful level of comprehension? Number one, information, let us assume here that information is received about some aspect of reality. It could be the state of the world, your environment, your business operation, or your mission or particular activity. So some information is received. Doesn't matter what. Let's not go there. Let's just say, okay, I have received some kind of information. And so we'll try to employ here some important aspects of information theory, which looks at information from a theoretical point of view rather than a literal point of view. And so, you know, critical thinking is extremely important if we understand the fundamental basis for it first and foremost. What is the fundamental basis of critical thinking is we don't take things literally. We look at the world, we look at reality from an objective viewpoint. So we don't take things literally, nor do we allow cognitive bias to intervene. That's key. Item number two, whatever information we have received is determined to either be important or not important. All right, so that's a second order of business. The first order of business is that we have received some kind of information that is not just junk mail. All right, it is something that that comes perhaps from a critical source. Is the information important or not important? Item number three, further considerations are made concerning the level of significance and urgency generated by this revealed information. Okay, so we consider it. We consider it with respect to, a number of things. It could be a number of dimensions, whatever. And item four then follows this. It is the problem, challenge, or issue is then clearly specified. So whatever the problem, challenge, or issue is based upon the information that we have received, and it could be the competitor is outperforming us. It could be that there is a serious issue in the workplace. It could be that there's a dangerous condition developing on the factory floor. It could be anything at all. All right. So the problem is then clearly specified. So problem clarification is the key. And here's where some kind of formalized process is necessary. Now, why is that? And my take on this is that there, for some strange reason, there is a human tendency to jump to conclusions. I don't actually know why that is. I mean, some people have some theoretical reasons that they have proposed, and I suppose that they're probably okay. It could be, I don't know, historical. It could be it could be part of our genetic structure, part of our human heritage, whatever. But we tend to jump to conclusions, and we need to pretty much not do that in a complex world. Because by doing so, and studies after studies have shown this, by doing so, we often make things worse. Okay, so clarify the problem, or what is the issue? Make sure that we clarify that. And make sure also that the problem clarification is pure. That is, it does not reference any possible solution. Now, the why we're doing this is extremely important. The reason why we're doing this is because we want to leave the door open to innovation. The way you leave the door open to innovation is that you specify the problem without any reference at all to any possible solution. Item five, the range of solution options then are specified once the problem is clarified. The range of solution options are specified that may prove effective in dealing with a problem, challenge, or issue. Item six, once we do that and we model that, we create a solution performance model. Now, again, we're not going to dive right down into the specifics, and the reason for that is very, very important, and it ought to be clear to all of us, because we want to leave the door open to innovation. And so we're going to model the solution to the problem, issue, or challenge. We're going to model it first. And it doesn't matter how we might and might not implement it. We're going to model it first. And then we're going to choose the best alternative among a set candidate alternatives. Now, we make our list, all right, and we have a cutoff point. And so there are certain candidate alternatives or solution proposals that are there that are all competing. Some have dropped off for a number of obvious reasons, perhaps, but we have a set, or we have a list of the top five or 10 or whatever. And then we have some kind of selection criteria, and we use that to select the best alternative. Or it could be we select two, right? And we then say, okay, we're not entirely sure whether solution A or solution B is better. So let us do an early prototype of both. And so we early prototype solution A and we early prototype solution B, and then we try out these early prototypes and see if that reveals something to us that we didn't quite know. And then once we select the best solution, then we continue to develop it and to put it in place or to execute it, whatever. Okay, so that completes our discussion of critical thinking essentials for this particular show and for this particular special edition series, this four-part series on critical thinking and business operations. And now we'll be right back and we'll press on to the Columbia accident. Okay, welcome back to this special edition of Throttle Up. And critical thinking and business operations is what we're calling this special edition. And the reason for that, of course, is that business activity is picking up dramatically. Many, many opportunities are opening up for many, if not most of us across the socioeconomic spectrum. These opportunities could be writing books. It could be getting on the speaking circuit. And I guess you could say that that's pretty much what I do. I have a radio show, and I have I'm an author of a number of books. I write books and articles and blog postings and stuff. I do some videos. I've got a couple of videos in national distribution now. I have a video channel that we're cranking up. It's called Critical Decision Making. And, okay, so that's what I do as a semi-retiree. But there's lots of opportunities there. It was in Nashville, Tennessee. I was doing a speaking engagement there in front of a bunch of business people. And I was talking to this younger gentleman about maybe starting his own consulting business. And so there's lots and lots of opportunities there. And he thought that was probably a pretty good idea, if not immediately, sometime in the near future. And so that's the whole point of what I'm trying to discuss here. I'm trying to say, let's go out there and find out, if not already, find out what the opportunities are. It could be even volunteer opportunities, certainly. And bring with us some critical thinking skills. Okay, let's bring with us some critical thinking skills to the workplace or to the environment that we are in. I think that is extremely important. My point of view is that's the most important thing we can do. We can exercise our power of reason. We can empower ourselves to think critically and to engage in higher order reasoning. And so let's bring critical thinking to the workplace, to our environment. It could be any place, even our social environment. Okay, so in this part, we're going to be talking about the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster. And the reason, again, the reason why we're going to do this is because we want to learn. We want to be better at what we do as humans when we are engaged in purposeful and mission-critical activities, which, of course, this was. Everything about this situation was mission-critical. Everything about the space shuttle program was it's no longer with us at the present time, but was mission-critical. And we're going to try to learn something, all of us, including me. All right. Now, we're not saying that we know any better or we could have done any better. We're looking at this objectively without casting blame. We're looking at this from the point of view of what can we learn? What can all of us learn from this? The Space Shuttle Columbia disaster. On February 1st, 2003, the Space Shuttle Columbia disintegrated upon re-entering Earth's atmosphere, killing all 7 crew members. The disaster was the second fatal accident in the Space Shuttle program after Space Shuttle Challenger, which broke apart and killed the 7 crew members 73 seconds after liftoff in 1986. Now, during the launch of STS-107, which was the Columbia's 28th mission, a piece of foam insulation broke off from where am I in my notes here? And struck, okay, so a piece of foam, I know, I got to get my act together here. A piece of foam struck off, it came off the external tank and struck the left wing of the orbiter. A few previous shuttle launches had seen damage ranging from minor to nearly catastrophic from foam shedding, but some engineers suspected that the damage to Columbia was more serious. NASA managers at the time limited the investigation, reasoning that the crew could not have fixed the problem if it had been confirmed. When Columbia re-entered the atmosphere of Earth, the damage allowed hot atmospheric gases to penetrate the heat shield and destroy the internal wing structure, which caused the spacecraft to become unstable and to break apart. After the disaster, space shuttle flight operations were suspended for more than 2 years, as they had been after the Challenger disaster. Construction of the International Space Station was put on hold. The station relied entirely on the Russian Roscosmos State Space Corporation for resupply for 29 months until shuttle flights resumed with STS-114 and 41 months for crew rotation until STS-121. Several technical and organizational changes were made, including adding a thorough on-orbit inspection to determine how well the shuttle's thermal protection system had endured the ascent, and keeping a designated rescue mission ready in case irreparable damage was found. Okay, so now this discussion continues, and here's kind of like my central point here as we delve into this discussion. And the central point, you know, I pointed this out before, which is this whole idea of risk management, all right, or to be a little bit more specific, operational risk management. What exactly does that mean, and how should we go about doing that when things don't seem to be going well? And the risk could be coming from many quarters. In this particular case, it was the risk came from the realm of the atmosphere, atmospheric conditions, and reentry, and the criticality of exit and reentry of the atmosphere. There's lots of critical aspects of that. It's a very, very precise maneuver, very precise trajectories that must be adhered to. But we could think of this as general risk management also. And how do we go about doing such a thing? You know, you remember the Deepwater Horizon disaster. Remember the reason for that centered around this poor risk management or risk management that was not effective. Okay, so, and maybe we can put it that way. Maybe that's a better way of saying that. Is there an effective way to manage operational risk in real time, or is there a bunch of ways that have been attempted in the past that have proven to be ineffective? And the book Logic of Failure by Dietrich Dorner is a great example of how we think we know what we're doing in terms of risk management, but when it comes down to actually doing it, we actually make matters worse instead of making them better. So let me talk about risk management here with respect to the Challenger. The heading of this discussion is flight risk management. In a risk management scenario, I'm reading this now from the report. In a risk management scenario similar to the Challenger disaster, NASA management failed to recognize the relevance of engineering concerns for safety and suggestions for imaging to inspect possible damage, and failed to respond to requests about the status of astronaut inspection of the left wing. And managers made three separate requests. Some made three separate requests for Department of Defense imaging of the shuttle in orbit to determine damage, if the damage was real and how extensive. While the images were not guaranteed to show the damage, the capability existed for imaging of sufficient resolution to provide meaningful examination. NASA management did not honor the request and in some cases intervened to stop the DOD from assisting. The accident board recommended subsequent shuttle flights be imaged while in orbit using ground-based or space-based DOD assets. Details of the DOD's unfulfilled participation with Columbia remain secret. Retired NASA officials stated that actively regarding other national assets and agencies remains classified, and I cannot comment on the aspects of the Columbia tragedy. Throughout the risk assessment process, senior managers were influenced by their belief that nothing could be done, even if damage was detected. This affected their stance on investigation urgency, thoroughness, and possible contingency actions. They decided to conduct parametric what-if scenario study more suited to determine risk probabilities of future events instead of inspecting and assessing the actual damage. Much of the risk assessment hinged on damage predictions to the thermal protection system. These fall into two categories: damage to the tile and damage to the reinforced leading edge panels. But damage prediction software was used to evaluate possible tile damage. None of this stuff proved to be beneficial to the understanding of the situation or the clarification of the problem. So problem clarification was, in fact, well, you know, it was incomplete. Problem clarification was incomplete, was flawed. There was an institutional bias too that we have to acknowledge. The institutional bias was that there was twofold. Number one is that we don't want to have other agencies to help us out. So cross agency participation or collaboration was frowned upon for various reasons. I don't even, I can't even begin to understand why. I've seen it happen personally. I've seen it happen in my experience. Why is it's just something I can't quite fathom. But it happens, and it happened in this case. Now, I want to also read something that I think is central to this argument that comes from, this thing comes from space.com. And this is a look back 20 years later. In the accident report, the Columbia Accident Investigation Board came up with a number of recommendations, if you will. And I think these are particularly important because it gets to the heart of the situation. Again, we're talking about operational risk management. How do we do that? Do we have something in place in our organization called the Operational Risk Management Center, if you will, or an arena or area or even experts? Do we have experts that can that are trained to deal with high-level operational risk management issues. Another way of saying that is that we have people trained when things become mission critical. Do we have mission critical responders or mission critical experts? And in this particular case, we can say with 100% assurance that for some strange reason, NASA did not have that. All right, so this report, in the weeks after the disaster, a dozen officials began shifting through the Columbia disaster information, and the Columbia Accident Investigation Board was formed and later released a multi-volume report. Besides the physical cause, which is the foam and its ramifications, the board had a damning assessment about the culture at NASA that led to the foam problem and other safety issues being minimized over the years. It said, and I quote, "Cultural traits and organizational practices detrimental to safety were allowed to develop," the board wrote, citing reliance on past success as a substitute for sound safety management practices and organizational barriers that prevented effective communication of mission-critical information among the problems that they found. The board recommended NASA ruthlessly seek and eliminate safety problems such as the foam to ensure astronaut safety in future missions. It also called for more predictable funding and political support for the agency and added that the shuttle must be replaced with a new transportation system soon. They went on to say that the shuttle is now an aging system, but still in development stage. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up. Now, this is a special edition of Throttle Up, and this special edition deals with critical thinking in business operations. Now, we have centered on an arena or a part of the, let's say, the business landscape or part of the business environment. And this arena is, what do we do when something becomes mission critical, or what do we do when we expect that something will become mission critical? So it either is mission critical or it will become, or we expect it to become very shortly or within a short period of time, it will become mission critical. What exactly do we do? All right. So where is our mission critical alarm in our organization? And I know you think I'm speaking metaphorically, but I'm actually not speaking metaphorically. Somewhere in the organization, it could be at headquarters building, it could be at the operational control center. And if you don't have an operational control center in your organization, I'm wondering why you don't. But where is the mission critical alarm? And it ought to be activated. Of course, it ought to be tested, just like a tsunami alarm ought to be tested. Mission critical alarm ought to be tested within the organization, and we ought to run drill and practice. But the alarm ought to be a real live thing. And it goes out, the alarm goes out, and people respond. Okay, well, here is another, and you say, okay, well, what is the Columbia disaster? Okay, so they didn't have a mission critical alarm in mission control, did they? No, they didn't. And of course, the you know, the great big question, the big picture question is why not? Why did they not have a mission critical alarm in the mission control center? So in your operational control center, where is your mission critical alarm? And if the alarm goes off, do you know what to do? Good question. If the alarm goes off, do you know what to do? Now, part of what I'm working on in terms of speaking engagements that I go to in workshops that I'm preparing for the near future, part of what I'm working on is what I call elite problem solvers. And who are they? Are they specifically trained in your organization? And what can they do? Okay, so this section is the San Francisco near disaster. Now, we are not going to be able to finish this week. So I'm assuming then next time we'll finish this discussion. But let me just set the stage here, and then we'll continue this next week. And I'm assuming we'll do a part five of this special edition on the evening of July 7th, 2017. Now, this disaster that was diverted in the last few seconds is so bone chilling that you can't even hardly believe it. On the evening of July 7th, 2017, at the conclusion of the regularly scheduled international passenger flight from Toronto to San Francisco, flight 759 nearly landed on a taxiway which already had four fully loaded and fueled airplanes holding short for takeoff. A retired pilot stated the runway confusion that almost happened probably came close to the greatest aviation disaster in aviation history, as five airplanes and over 1,000 passengers were at imminent risk. The NTSB completed a major investigation, and the results of its investigation were recorded and presented in their report, which of course is available and it's in the public domain. Now, the details of this we'll get into next week, but the bottom line is that the whole system was not set up sufficiently enough, just very much like the Columbia accident. The whole system, this air transportation system that we have, was not set up to handle those particular situations in which things quickly deteriorate and become mission critical, and they approach the realm of chaos and catastrophe. The system is not set up to handle that and is not set up to respond to that which is mission critical in any kind of meaningful way. There's lots of reasons for that. We'll get into that next week. This is going to be a fascinating discussion for all of us next week. And so before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here, and I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service, and I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.